While the November election is months away, we're getting an early start here at Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire Bureau. During the next 9 weeks, we'll be bringing you 9 state legislative candidate forums, one for each assembly and senate district up for election in our listening area. Tonight, we start at the far west end of the state with the 28th State Assembly District. The 28th comprises all of Burnett County, most of Polk, and the western and northernmost portions of St. Croix County. This hour, we'll get to know the two men running to represent the 28th Assembly District, and we'll give you an opportunity to ask them direct questions during the West Side's 28th State Assembly Candidate Forum. And I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to introduce the incumbent in this race. Eric Severson is a Republican elected to the State Assembly in 2010, and he is also an emergency room physician, is married with 2 kids, and currently living in Star Prairie. Eric Severson, thanks so much for being part of the forum.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Next, I'd like to introduce the Democratic challenger in the race. Adam Beaver is a high school band teacher in the Unity School District who lives with his wife and 3 children in Balsam Lake. Adam Beaver, thanks for being part of the forum as well.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Our pleasure. And again, I'd like to welcome you, the listener, to take part in the forum by calling in with your questions and comments for the candidates. The number to do that is 800-228-5615. And you can post your questions on the Westside Facebook page as well. And with that, we're going to get started right into the questions, and we'll start with the incumbent, Eric Severson. And basic question that starts, that usually kicks off any kind of candidate forum: what incumbent or what accomplishments as an incumbent are you most proud of during your 2 years in office, and why would you like to seek a second term?
Well, I mean, I got to say, first of all, we did exactly what we said we were going to do 2 years ago. We said we were going to balance the budget. We weren't going to raise taxes. We were going to have more government responsibility and less spending. That's exactly what we did. We took $3.6 billion budget deficit and now have a projected $150 million surplus. That's honestly what I'm most proud of, is that so many people questioned me 2 years ago. Oh, politicians say they're going to do this, they're going to do this. As soon as they're there, they do nothing. And we just keep on doing the same old thing, spending more, going farther in debt, and no one takes any responsibility. And truly, we did something very different and very unique in that we balanced the budget and we cut down the deficit, which obviously has not happened in an awful long time in this state or in this country, for that matter. And I would say that's the proudest thing that I've done. Why do I want to continue to do this? We still have a large amount of too much government. There's too much government regulation, getting in the way of individuals' lives, getting in the way of businesses to succeed and thrive in this state and in this area. And really, we need to do that. We need to really cut down on the government size and really the government regulation. And that's something that we haven't been able to do over the last couple of years, in a large part due to the fact that we've had an election on average every 8 months for the last 2 years. So overall, there's still a lot of work to do, and we've got a long ways to go to really get this state and this area back to where it needs to be.
All right. Thank you for that. Basically an opening statement, Eric Severson. I'm going to do the same for you, Adam Beaver. First of all, what's pushing you to enter this race and attempt to remove Eric Severson from the state assembly?
Well, thanks, Rich. First of all, before we start, I just want to say thanks to you for doing this. I think it's really important that you're doing these forums, and I think it's important that people know the candidates very well before they vote. So I think it's a really good thing you're doing.
Education is key.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very passionate about our community, and I have very deep roots here. Just to give you a little backstory of me, my mother was born and raised in Grantsburg. My father grew up in the Balsam Lake area. After they were married, they came back to live in Polk County. My sister and I grew up on the shores of Bone Lake. After I married my wife, Julie, I saw an opportunity to move back to the place I loved. I can't think of a better place to raise our adopted 3 children. The qualities that I love most about our district are clean lakes, clean air, friendly communities, and successful schools. In the past 2 years, the very qualities that makes this area a desirable place to live has been under attack by politicians in Madison. Too many of the decisions made in Madison do not align with the values of the people in our communities. The environment is under attack, communities are more divided than they ever have been, and our schools are losing funding at an alarming rate. I believe we can do better, and that's why I've decided to run for state assembly. We have a lot to be proud of in northwestern Wisconsin. The people are hardworking, dependable, and willing to help their fellow neighbor. Together, we can get the job done and create wonderful communities that our children will be proud of. And I ask for your vote November 6th.
Follow-up for you, Adam Beaver.
Sure.
What values have been attacked and how?
Well, that's a great question. I really think with the extreme Republican agenda that's been happening in Madison, they basically talk a lot about budgets, and they talk a lot about balancing the budget. But when we talk about balancing the budget, it's really not the Republicans that balance the budget. The truth of the matter is it's the taxpayers that balance the budget. It's municipalities that balance the budget. It's school districts that balance the budget. Truly, when they say they made hard decisions, they pushed the decisions down to the local communities to make the decisions. Then we had to decide which services we were going to cut. We had to make the hard decisions. And I think that's something that's really important that we need to know about our budget balancing process. Now, he and I really agree with, and we will see eye to eye on balancing the budget, but I think when you see their budget and where they gave tax breaks to large corporations, that's a little different philosophy than I have, and it's different than the values in our district.
Eric Severson, I'd like to give you a chance to respond to that. I mean, has the party in power, your party, been attacking values and as far as the way the budget was balanced?
Well, I would say if you want to say that it's not a tough decision when you got 100,000 people yelling at you, screaming at you,
sure,
threatening you. If you don't think that's a hard decision, then I'd hate to know what he actually thinks a hard decision is. That's the truth of the matter. Those are difficult decisions. And I've had people who I've called friends for years who won't even talk to me. That's a hard decision. So you can say all you want that this isn't a hard decision, but that's just because, as Teddy Roosevelt said, it's easy for people to be critical because they've never stood in the ring. You know, and so it's easy to stand back there and say, that's not a hard decision, because he's never been in the ring. So that's a little unsettling that he thinks that that's not a hard decision. When, you're putting your friends, your people you called your friends are angry at you. These people are calling your house, threatening your wife and your children, and it's not a hard decision. Yeah, that's a little exceptional statement on his part. You know, as far as that, we're taking away the values of the state by saying, hey, we're going to balance the budget. I mean, I live in a family where if we don't have the money, we don't spend it. And you can say, oh, you're just pushing this on to someone else. The truth is, that's just where all the money comes from. It all comes from the state. We have to decide where it comes up, where the money goes. Those are hard decisions, and it's up to the state to balance the budget, no matter what he says. So we did balance the budget. I don't think we took away values. You know, as an example, other thing we did was, you know, I think you made the statement, Rich, that there was a – no, I think about it. It was Adam. Adam said that the politicians were attacking the local communities. Well, that's exactly what had happened before I was actually in office. The Doyle administration, the DNR, had said that everyone will chlorinate their water. No matter if you have good water or not, whether there's any problems, everyone will chlorinate their water. And it was based off of faulty evidence. People just decided this. It was a political decision. And it would have cost the taxpayers of Balsam Lake $2 million. $2 million. They have a yearly budget of about $400,000. And it was going to be $2 million, and it was unfunded by the state. This is something we were able to say, this is absolutely ludicrous, to be pushing this onto the village of Balsam Lake in order that they have to spend $2 million, something coming down from the state where they should be able to make those local decisions. So really, I mean, when you put it into the local decision makers' hands, the people who live in these communities are there so that they can make the decisions instead of somebody down in Milwaukee or Madison making the decision for them, makes a whole lot more sense to me.
I'd like to respond to that if possible.
Sure.
I actually talked to the village board president about those numbers that you were talking about, Dr. Severson, and what he said was that was just one proposal for keeping our water clean and safe. He said there's many cheaper alternatives that were available that were not even discussed at that time. I really think that one of the things that you're talking about, whereas you're giving us, you say that it's faulty research, but there was some really serious research done by Marshfield Clinic on how that one issue has caused even more virus in our groundwater in the municipalities that chose not to treat their water, how their people are getting sick. But not only their people, but senior citizens and children get affected even more. And so I respectfully disagree with that decision. I think we need government to help us and to make sure they're looking out for us as well. I don't want to take the fact that local control is important, and I do agree with that. But when you throw out another number like $2 million, and you better be ready to have at least more than one bid. And I think people understand that as well.
Eric Severson, would you like to respond quickly? I'd like to move on.
Yes. You know, if Balsam Lake tells me it's costing them $2 million, I'm gonna trust the local officials. Also, if you want to debate a medical journal, I'll be happy to do that. I don't think Rich really wants to do that tonight. I don't think the people want to listen to that. But there is no statistical significance involved in that paper that they used. But if you want to debate that, I'm happy to do that all night long. Because I've read the paper. I don't know if you have, Adam.
And with that, I want to get to one of the major issues that is facing our local, state, and national economies, and that's jobs. And we'll go back to Eric Severson. Wisconsin has been slowly recovering from what has been called the Great Recession. Unemployment in our state is currently at 7.3%, which is lower than the national average, but it's still a significant number. If elected to a second term, what specifically would you do to help shrink that unemployment number?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because what you look at is since 2010, the confirmed by the United States federal government, we have added 35,000 jobs in the last 2 years. Is that as much as I'd like? No, I mean I'd like to see unlimited jobs, I mean, but realistically we've got to go with what we can. And Julie, you hit it. We're on a recession. We are in a national recession. And so really when you look at it and say, we've got a national recession and we are still adding jobs, and you compare ourselves to a state like Illinois, who is doing the exact opposite things, and they are going higher into debt, higher unemployment, lowering of their debt rating. Those are all the things that say we're moving in the right direction, despite everything else that's going on in the whole national economy running by the federal government. What we need to do from here on out, I mean, I think most people understand that when the government gets involved in something, they aren't creating jobs. They're taking money, putting it in their own pocket, and then giving some of that back into different places that they pick winners and losers. We have to stop picking the winners and losers. I think Paul Ryan says it best. We can't have welfare for some of these big corporations. We can't have corporate welfare. That's just not something we want to do. It's something we got to get rid of. We got to get government out of business. Let capitalism and the free market actually really run society and what's going, or not run society, but run our whole economic engine.
And Adam Beaver, same question to you. What specific things? And if you could be specific as possible, if elected to the state assembly, what would you do to encourage hiring and drive down that 7% unemployment?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a big job. And like I said, I don't begrudge Dr. Severson when he inherited the recession. He's absolutely right. There's lots of factors that are going on with job creation. And I would be lying if I said that's all some one person's fault and things like that. I'm not really that kind of a person, I think. But you asked me a question and I want to answer it. And the biggest thing I can say is that the public sector and the private sector are not enemies. And one of the things that I think we're really making a mistake when we do that, when we start putting this wedge between the public sector and the private sector, saying government is bad and we need to get out of the way and all that stuff, whenever we've had in this country, in this state, whenever we've had the biggest economic growth, it's when we have good partnerships where everybody is represented at the table. And I would like to see a lot of that type of thing start to happen. You got to remember that when the budget was passed in for Act 10 in the new budget, that was passed in a very, very short amount of time. And we can talk to about all that went down. And I don't really want to dredge all that because it was kind of a nightmare. And Mr. Mm-hmm. Severson will agree with that. But on the same token, the whole reason why that nightmare started is because they wanted to ramrod that bill through in a very short amount of time. And now you can say what you want about emergency status and all that kind of thing. But in my point of view, I really think that most business owners are honest, hardworking people who want to be successful and they want to play by the rules. And it seems to me we're really missing the mark on what businesses have been asking for. And that's basically a trained workforce and stability in government. We haven't had that. We've had one of the most divisive governments on record that I can even remember in Wisconsin. And my plan would be to invest in education, especially in tech school, higher ed, and public K-12 education. Have local businesses be a part of the process. Apprenticing, work transition programs, having the best teaching force in America. That's what drives economic growth. Stability in government means that government will help with venture capital, especially if it means job growth for solid full-time jobs for Wisconsinites. A balanced budget that will look at taxes across the board, not just on businesses, and look at ways to reform the tax code so that we maximize revenue. Government can facilitate reduced health care costs for small businesses by creating a smart health care exchange so businesses in the 28th district aren't dragged down by health care costs. These are some things I'd like to work for if I'm elected.
If I may follow up on the investing in education, that money has to come from somewhere. And with a state that has a budget that's tight, where does it come from?
Well, and this is my point. You know, it's very easy. Many, many years ago in 2000, the state promised that they would pay for 2/3 of education. Ever since that promise, it's beginning less and less and less. And somebody's got to make up for that, too.
Both parties. Have,
right. And, yeah. and absolutely it's both parties. And what I'm saying, and I'm sorry to Mr. Severson, you really took that personally when I was talking about making hard decisions. One of the hard decisions we are going to have to make is tax reform and how we fund public education. The public education finance system right now is absolutely broken. I believe the way we finance schools leaves broken promises and bad feelings between property taxpayers and school districts. Our state truly values education. Our businesses expect that our people will have the best training possible. We need to get serious about finding new ways to finance education other than just rough state aid and property tax. That's the only way we're going to get out of that.
And with that, we're going to go to the phones. And a reminder...
Can I say one thing on that?
Please do.
That's actually something that Adam Beaver and I actually agree on. That, you know what the funding system is most people will look at it and say it's poor because it depends so much on property tax in the state. Most everyone that goes in and wants this, including myself, I would love to see this reformed. There's got to be a way to do it. The truth of the matter is there's actually people from many, many, many states all around the country actually come to Wisconsin and see how our funding is done because they find that it's done much better than their state, which I actually find really ironic. And I think, how is it done in these other states? Here's Adam Beaver and I agreeing that the funding is not done well in this state, but other states say it's done so much better than in theirs. It's tough. And so, you know, and that's a point that we actually agree on, that, you know what, it's going to be tough decisions. But I tell you what really makes it really a tough decision is we get to the point where we did some stuff in the last session, and you get 100,000 people protesting you and threatening you. And you think, boy, if we try to change this, what's going to happen this time? And so I understand people have a right to protest, but there comes a point where, yeah, you know, decisions do have to be made, even though they are difficult and even though they are hard. We have to come up with solutions because the hard times call for hard solutions. And that's what we've done, and that's what we'll continue to do.
A reminder for those listening that we're hosting the 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum right now, and on the phone we've got incumbent Republican Eric Severson, and in the studio we have Democratic challenger Adam Beaver. And we're going to go to the phones first time tonight, and it's It's a call from outside of the district, but still an interesting issue that I think is worth conversation. And we go to Ryan and Eau Claire. You're on the air, sir.
Hi, I'm actually in your district. I'm just not currently in your district. I'm in Eau Claire right now.
Okay.
But the first thing I want to say is earlier in the conversation, it was said the money comes from the state, which isn't true. The money comes from the taxpayers. And it was not made to sound like the money comes from the taxpayers. It was just the money comes from the state is how it was worded. And I take a lot of offense to that because I pay my taxes, you know, all the time. You know, I pay my taxes every time I fill up for gas. I pay my taxes all over the place, and all that money does go to the state, who then funnels it out.
Sure.
So the money does come from the taxpayers. But my question for both candidates, and without any talking lines or, you know, the National Republican Party or the National Democratic Party tells us to say this, where are your guys' stance on medical marijuana? I ask this coming from a child of someone who was disabled in their 20s, and that's the only relief they were able to find. And my father has basically been made a criminal for 40 years just to be able to not be in pain every day.
Good question, and we'll go first to Eric Severson with that one.
First of all, I think he makes a great point about the tax. The money does come from the taxpayers. That's a fantastic point. Without a doubt, and that's who at all times where, you know, we have to listen to. As far as medical marijuana, I'll be honest with you, I am not for it. I actually had a long airplane flight with one day with a guy who grew marijuana, and he told me, we who are growing marijuana for a business want to get into medical marijuana and get everyone to approve it, because all we want to do is expand our, you know, we just want to expand marijuana use. In a sense, that's why it's, I'm against it. Also, in medicine, I found there's multiple things that work very, very well for pain. Now, you know, where he's talking about, I'm not doubting him that he's saying that's the only thing that worked, and that's a rare exception. But, you know, in my experience, I've seen very few things that can't be treated pain-wise, with some of the pain medications, but also knowing what the aspect behind, talking to some of this guy who was into the field of medical marijuana and marijuana use in general, was that all he wanted to do really was expand marijuana use throughout the whole country, and that's something that I'm not for.
All right, Adam Beaver, what's your thought on medical marijuana? And Wisconsin is one of the states that obviously does not allow it.
Well, it's a great question, first of all, and I appreciate it. I really believe that we need to really be listening to people when they say they need things like this. I work in a school district, and I'm very, very cautious of drug use. It's one of the things that we make sure we really look at to fight. And to be honest with you, in our district, we do have drug problems. So I am aware of that kind of thing and how we need to be careful with how we do that. And so, like anything else, being cautious about medical marijuana is something that we should do. However, I don't think it should be off the table. I guess I disagree that we need to make it completely illegal, especially for medicinal use. I think it's something we need to look at, especially with the costs of drugs now. A lot of people are having a hard time just affording drugs. And
prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs, exactly. Yes.
Medications, I think.
Yeah. Right, medications, yeah. Exactly. And so this is something that we could look at. However, I would agree with Dr. Severson that we do need to be very cautious on this topic, because it isn't something that would change overnight.
All right, and you're listening to the Westside 28th State Assembly Candidate Forum with incumbent Republican Eric Severson and Democratic challenger Adam Beaver. We'll hear more from the candidates and take more of your calls when we return. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the Westside 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined this hour by two men vying this November to represent far western Wisconsin in the State House in Madison. They are Republican incumbent Eric Severson of Star Prairie and Democratic challenger Adam Beaver of Balsam Lake. And we're taking your calls as well, so you, the listener, can have a chance to speak directly with those looking to represent you. The number is 800-228-5615. The number is 1-800-228-5615. And it was mentioned before, and it is really a dredging of the past, but it's still something that could come up depending on which power party was in power, and that, of course, is collective bargaining. And Eric Severson, your 2 years in office, your first 2 years in office have been determined by many to be very politically turbulent as far as Wisconsin history goes, and that's one of the major issues, the collective bargaining changes. Why did it need to be reformed?
Well, you said that's one of the issues.
It's pretty much the issue.
I would think that that was the issue that made it so turbulent, but
there are others. Others as well.
Why did it need to be done? It was, you look at it and say, all right, we had a $3.6 billion budget deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a friend of mine who was actually a teacher the other day about this, and he disagreed with me, but I was trying to explain. I said, if you said, okay, we have to cut $3.6 billion of spending in the budget, when two-thirds of the budget goes to salaries and benefits, and we need to find $3.6 billion, and if you started just cutting that to local communities, into the school districts, into the counties, you would end up having to have people laid off. And the real value with this is that we're able to do a very, very reasonable thing. And despite the fact that it's been portrayed as this somehow egregious thing that has been happening, it's a very reasonable thing to say, we want you to contribute 5% to your own retirement and pay 12% of your health insurance.
Well, I think that by itself wasn't the entire issue. That definitely was part of it, but just the changes to how employees or what employees, public employees, that is, can bargain for.
Okay. Yeah. Just a second. I'll get to that too.
Sure.
So, to say, okay, let's have this done. This is very those are very reasonable things. Because if you just cut the money and you didn't give the school districts, you didn't give the counties, you didn't give the villages, the cities, the townships, the ability to have some tools to use to really make their own budgets balance, they would have had to have layoffs, and that would have cut a huge amount of service. I mean, I just think about in our local school district, with the teachers that are there, if you had to cut 10% of the teachers, that would have been a large number. That would have really affected the education. But with this, you were able to not cut the teachers, not cut the staff, and really be able to carry on as things were. Now, what you're talking about is some of the collective bargaining issues behind it. And truthfully, I mean, you look back historically, the largest progressive Democrat president ever was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Very good president. I'll say he was a good president. Led us through World War II. Anyway, enough history.
Mm-hmm.
But even he said there is no reasonable way for us to think that we could have a union collectively bargaining for the public employees, because at that point in time there's no give and take. So we could have made all these changes. And the next time they sit down at the bargaining table, they say, we're taking them all back, or we're walking.
All right.
And that's where the big changes are. Now, the other thing is that, you said this is the biggest sectarian time ever. What's actually interesting is, that's why I laughed and said, it is this Act 10 that people think about,
mm-hmm.
and that it was so divisive. But when you actually look at the numbers on all the bills that were passed, this session was the highest in the last 10 years to have somebody outside of the majority party be voting for the bills. So there were actually a whole number of bills that were had very much bipartisan support and were not just one-sided. So, but that gets overshadowed and people don't hear that at all. That there was a lot of things working together because people just remember one thing.
Fair enough. Adam Beaver, as a high school band teacher, I would guess that you were directly impacted by the changes in collective bargaining and the increases in contributions. If you were, you know, if elected to the state assembly, would you work to reinstate collective bargaining and reverse those contributions?
Well, you know, it's disturbing to me to hear Dr. Severson talk about people and the fact that they're just basically trying to get as much as they can all the time, greedy people, not concerned about their communities, not concerned about the real financial problems that we have. It's not giving us enough credit. Before I answer this, you know, collective bargaining, if people think that I'm running just to reinstate collective bargaining, I have to say that's not why I'm running. You know, voters have talked to me on either sides of this issue, and I am listening. A representative needs to listen to both sides, and that's one of the things I strive to do. But from what I hear from teachers, and this is the biggest concern about the collective bargaining, which really had nothing to do with fiscal issues, is the fact of teacher voice. Teacher voice now is gone from the classroom, period. It's gone. And collective bargaining ensured that that kind of say happened. And when we talk about our kids in Wisconsin, in my opinion, our kids have two advocates for them with the state. One is their parents and two is their teachers. And you just took away teacher voice in the classroom when you abolished collective bargaining the way you did. And again, what I'd like to say is for true cooperation, why did it have to happen so quickly? Why couldn't we all come to the table and talk about solutions? Why couldn't we problem solve the budget? Why couldn't we have those hard discussions, working together with teachers, working together with municipalities, working together with everyone who is a card player, not having the only seat at the table, but at least having a seat, working together with businesses, have them have a seat at the table too. Let's come together as a community and a state and figure this out. And so to answer your question, I would like to see teacher voice get back in the classroom. I think Eric's right. I think we probably needed the concessions, and that's why a lot of the teachers, I know at my school district, we even before all this happened, we elected as a union body to take less money because we knew we were going to be short. And this is the kind of decisions that people are making that never make the news. And I think people need to know that. And one more thing I want to say about collective bargaining, too. I've been teaching for 15 years at my school district. Not one time did I feel like because of collective bargaining, I got everything that I ever wanted and the taxpayers just had no say. The whole system was set up so that the school board is elected by taxpayers and they represent the taxpayers at the table. And then the staff are on the other side of the table and we work together to solve the money. There's only so much money. And so we just had to figure out where it all goes. And that's basically what it was. And as the state was pinching us with less funding, we had to get more and more creative. And when we talk about layoffs, when he says there wouldn't be layoffs with that, there were still tons of layoffs throughout the whole state. I don't think it's good to deny that. And plus the fact that we're not even talking about furloughs and other things that happened during this cycle. Some very misleading statements, I think, on collective bargaining.
Would you like to respond, Eric Severson?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll just go start with the furloughs. There have been no furloughs in the last 2 years. That was all done by the Democrats and by Governor Doyle. Nothing to do with the furlough. So, I mean, if you didn't like them, that's you can't take that one up on me. If he wants to, you know, talk about the collective bargaining and that, you know, the interesting thing is that he says this isn't why he's in it. What's funny is that there's multiple people that live in the community with him who've said he's actually directly said to him, the only reason I'm doing this is because I'm in this for this one reason, for Act 10. That's why I'm in this. I think that's actually a very interesting thing that he's gone out and said that to people, but now he's saying that that's not the case. There's also, you know, the whole issue of have there been layoffs around the state? Yeah, there have been. The interesting thing about that is that where those layoffs occurred, 78% of them were in areas that didn't use the tools that they were given by the state. They had already made an agreement with the WEA. The WEA would not allow them to get out of the agreement. And so the school districts were forced to lay the teachers off. That's actually the truth, and that's actually the sad part about it. is that when given the opportunity to change it, the teachers in those districts did not, and the WA did not.
I'd like to respond.
And
to
truly, if there was, please. If they had wanted to do this stuff and to sit down at the table, there was a huge opportunity to do it actually before I was even in office. They called a special session to pass these things, and not one of these concessions was on the table. Not one. They were going to pass it with a raise, and one person stood up and said, "This isn't right. This isn't right. This is going to hurt our state." And voted against it and kept it from happening. Right. So it's interesting to have him say that, oh, no, all these concessions were fine. We understood that. But the truth is that when they were bargaining with it on the state level, they did not give even one concession in December of 2009. And so in January 2010, we had to act. And they had proved that they will not actually want to work with us. And these things are done and they're taken care of. I mean, what we really need to think about is where we're going to be going in the future.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be happening?
Exactly. Just yes or no? Have you told people in the district that this is the only reason you're running is collective bargaining? And with that, I do want to move to the caller on the line.
Sure, absolutely not. I have no idea where you heard that, but there are so many issues that are facing our district, and Act 10 is just one issue of many different. And I'm going to tell you right now, I have never said that to a constituent ever.
All right, and with that, we're going to go to. We've got Jesse on the line from Balsam Lake. Jesse, you're on the air.
Thank you. I want to thank you for having such a good show on the west side.
Well,
I love Wisconsin. I love the Northwoods and everything is really beautiful up here. I'm really concerned. I think we dodged a bullet on this mining issue. And I really would like to know how Eric Severson voted on AB 426, but actually my question is to both candidates. Do you think that taconite mining up here in the North Woods is going to pollute our environment? That's what I'd like to know.
All right.
Did a little research on it. I like drinking my clean well water, and I like eating fish that I catch. And that's my question to the candidates.
All right, Jesse, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Adam
Beaver. Where
do you want to start? Let me start with Adam Beaver, and then we'll
sure.
go to you, Eric.
Thanks for calling, Jesse. And I just want to tell you, especially in the district, in the 28th Assembly District, our main economic driver is our environment, period. Our hunting and fishing are so important to our livelihood, to our recreation, to our way of life up there. Many of the constituents that live in the 28th District live there because of the environment. I mean, that's one of their main reasons for moving to the 28th District. And I hear that over and over again when I'm on the campaign trail. And your question, your direct question is, does mining pollute? And I would just say, and I know it's going to sound like I'm waffling, but when we are in this economic times and it is tough and people are hurting and it's really important that we need to be very careful about saying yes or no and make that a black and white issue. But what I would say is this, I would say that at no time can we make a choice between our environment and the economy. At no time can we make that choice. Gaylord Nelson is one of my heroes in government, and he was a pioneer in protecting it. And he was one of our greatest assets, I feel, from District 28. And my opponent's philosophy is that environment is a resource that can be bought and sold to the highest bidder, and we should be rolling back laws to make this process easier. And I can't tell you how much I disagree with that. I think we should be investing in researching ways to bring green business into our district without sacrificing our precious environment and wetlands. I believe we should find ways to reward businesses that spend local and promote environmentally friendly policies. And I also believe that we should be creative in ways to promote tourism and recreation, the cornerstone of our economy. Now, the mining issue is a big issue. There's the taconite issues, and then there's also frac sand mining. Right now, we have very little regulation in regards to that. My opponent has said many times that he wants to have local control over all the regulations with mining. But I would submit to our listeners today that mining is not a partisan issue. It's a community issue. It's really important to understand that we all are affected by mining in one way or another, and we all should have a seat at that table to decide what happens. And I'm not saying that I think, you know, I want to quash jobs or anything like that. I understand that we're hurting and we need jobs, and that's definitely something that we should look at. But I think we should be very careful, and we should not sacrifice the environment to create those jobs.
Eric Severson, what are your thoughts on whether mining impacts the environment? And I do want to talk a bit about frac sand mining to follow that up.
You know, I'll answer the caller's question first. How did I vote for it? I voted for the mining, mm-hmm. the iron ore mining.
Okay.
Do I believe that it pollutes the water? I grew up in the Iron Range of Minnesota. I grew up there. I lived there. Been to the Boundary Waters, which is in the heart of the Iron Range. I have stood on ice 10 feet thick in the Boundary Waters and seen the fish at the bottom of the lake. Do I believe it's going to pollute our waters when it's been going on there for... When did taconite mining begin? It was right after World War II, but before that they were doing iron mining there.
Right.
I mean, it's been going on there since the 1800s.
Exactly, yes.
Much as iron mining was done here in northern Wisconsin in the 1800s, what we've never done is done mining taconite here in northwest Wisconsin. Do I think that should change? I do believe that should change. I don't believe it's going to change the water level. We're not talking about chemical mining. This isn't zinc or copper or gold or silver mining, which is a whole different entity in and of itself. We're talking about iron ore mining with no chemicals. So do I believe it's going to pollute our water? No. And why do I say that? Because I lived there. I lived it. I lived it my whole life growing up.
And with that, I'd like
to... I don't believe that.
With that, I'd like to talk about frac sand mining, and I'll stick with you, Eric Severson. It's a big issue in western Wisconsin. Folks that oppose it, they're worried about the environmental impacts, fugitive dust, which could, you know, which is silica particles that could get trapped in lungs, and there's all kinds of debate over whether or not it's going to be harmful to health, whether it's going to use too much water, et cetera, et cetera. So do you support frac sand mining? And if so, how should it be regulated? I know there were some attempts at bills from both parties to kind of regulate this issue from the state.
There was no bills that came up for regulating frac sand mining. Maybe someone wrote them, but they never came up for discussion and debate.
Okay, there was some from Kathleen Vinehout, I believe, but I don't know if they made it into actual discussion.
Yeah,
but.
Just, I'm going to go way back for just one second, if you allow me.
Sure.
If you don't want me to, tell me not, Rich.
go way back.
Talking about discussion and debate, you know, Mr. Beaver said twice that we're trying to ram Act 10 through. The truth of the matter is, it is the record for the longest debate in committee ever in the state of Wisconsin since the state became a state, and the longest debate on the floor ever since Wisconsin became a state. So if doing things for the record longest time is the idea of going really fast and not hearing the other side, then I just can't see where he's coming from.
Six
on that.
6 days and one hearing, if I remember right.
What's
correct?
That?
6 days and one public hearing?
That is correct.
Okay.
6 days straight.
Okay.
All right, and well, back to the frac sand mining.
Most of them last an hour. Frac sand mining.
Yeah.
Frac sand mining is a huge huge thing for Western Wisconsin. It's actually a huge instrument for our whole country. If we look at the idea of being energy independent for our country, which has been going on, people have been talking about since the 70s. People say, you know, we've got about 22 billion barrels of oil and natural gas that we can tap with technology that we had 10 years ago. That's the number that people thought, that's all that the United States got. We're going to be dependent on getting oil from Saudi Arabia or from OPEC for years and decades to come. The idea of hydraulic fracturing has opened up the possibility of 220 billion, billion barrels of oil and natural gas. What's really interesting about it is that just 2 weeks ago, the EPA came out in a statement and said, wow, carbon dioxide levels are the lowest they have been in 20 years in the United States. They were stunned by this. They were stunned because they said, why would this happen? We haven't done anything to restrict businesses and to regulate businesses in the last year. And the truth of the matter is that they said the reason it is because all these electrical companies that were burning coal switched over to natural gas. And they were burning natural gas, which burns cleaner than coal, to generate electricity. So we ended up having less greenhouse gas emissions because we were burning natural gas. The reason they had cheaper natural gas is because we had frac sand to get to that natural gas. So when Adam Beavers talks about having green jobs in the community, this is exactly a market-driven green job. We are decreasing carbon dioxide emissions by frac sand mining right here in the state. And the truth of the matter is that there are not a lot of places that have perfect frac sand. But this area of the state is one of them. This area of the state of Wisconsin is one of the very few.
Mm-hmm. Adam Beaver, what are your thoughts on frac sand mining and how should it be regulated or should it?
Well, Dr. Severson and I disagree on their version of clean, green economy. Frac sand mining is very, very energy intense to get out of the ground and to transport and to do lots of different things. But be that as it may, I consider myself a very moderate person. And when I looked at the frac sanding issue, I talked to a lot of different people about this, about what they said. Some people are very against it because they don't want a full 24-hour operation mine right next to their house. I mean, there's that consideration. Some people are for it because they say, we need jobs, we need jobs. And, you know, and I get that. We do need jobs. And Dr. Severson's right. It is a good thing to create jobs. But I think we need to be careful about the kinds of things that happen once we have a frac sand facility. For example, there is the dangerous silica sand. Where are the regulations that are going to do that? In a recent article, Dr. Severson said we should just trust the businesses to worry about that and the mining companies. And while that's real nice, I guess I'd like a little bit more assurance that they are going to follow the law. Another thing that he said in an article is he said if they damage the water, they'll have to be responsible to clean it up. Well, if the water's damaged, the water's damaged. That's not something that, you know, that I want to wait for a company to say, oops, I guess we'll just clean this up because we made this mistake. I'd rather have them do it the right way the first thing. But let me be clear. If there is money to be made on frac sand mining and we are going to make sure that, you know, and they're going to be using our roads and our infrastructure and things to pull the sand out of our communities, I hope that we have the good sense that they are going to have to contribute towards that when they do that kind of thing, so that our communities can benefit from it.
And very quickly, one of the things that I mentioned, I was mentioning some sort of state regulation on frac sand mining. That might not have been the exact right way to put it, but there was an attempt by some legislators from southeastern Wisconsin, I believe, to limit the more counties' ability to enact moratoriums. And they said it wasn't in direct response to all the moratoriums on frac sand mining, but it definitely would have restricted that sort of thing. And Eric Severson, first to you, and then quickly for both of you, Adam Beaver. Should the state tell a county or municipality what it can or cannot enact a moratorium for?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think that frac sand mining is good. If people in a county or a township don't want to do that, they should be able to say, we don't want to have anything here. We want to have a moratorium on this. The truth is they're sitting on a natural resource that is very valuable. It's so valuable, in fact, that despite, as Adam said, there's the shipping costs and so forth that have gone on, that it's still a very viable natural resource that, that these businesses can make money on. And that's why you want to leave it to that local community. If they want to put a moratorium on that, that's their choice. I'm okay with that. I don't believe it's a choice that I would want to make. But if the majority of people in that community want to make that choice, that is their decision.
All right.
That's why we don't want to have it coming down from the state one way or the other. You know, and that's really where it's important, where instead of saying, all right, as in a recent article, Adam said he wants his piece of the pie from this. He really, you leave it to the local level.
Well,
they're
going to
know what's needed for these roads. And so these sand companies that are trying to mine this sand, they understand very well, boy, a lot of these roads were set up as country roads. I mean, think about, where I live. I live on frac sand. And if a 20-ton truck was driving on my road five times a day, the road's going to break down pretty fast.
All right, Eric Severson, we are getting close to the top of the hour. I want to give just a minute to Adam Beaver to respond.
Just say that the local communities understand that, and they will work with the companies to make sure those roads are repaired.
All right.
The problem with that is, and this is the problem in our district, is that not many of our local municipalities have zoning ordinances that cover this. And so what companies are doing is, before there's any kind of discussion, they're making deals with landowners and making this stuff happen before the people are even aware of it. That's my concern about it.
All right. And with that, we're out of time, but I want to thank both of my guests very, very sincerely for being part of the program. This is the 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum, and incumbent Republican Eric Severson and Democratic challenger Adam Beaver. Thank you guys both so much for being part of this.
Thank you, Rich.
Thanks very much.
And
hey,
also,
Adam, it was great to talk to you.
Yep, you too. Thank you.
And also, I'd like to thank Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, for handling on-air production, Rebecca Rudolph for helping produce our forum, Hannah Lagerman for promotions, and Molly O'Hearn, Grace Fair, and Dean Collenbeck for keeping the studios humming. And a big thanks goes out to our dedicated and hardworking electrical engineers, Dick Madouse. You're a lifesaver. I am Rich Kramer, asking you to join us again next Thursday. We're going to go to the 29th State Assembly District and have another candidate forum with John Murtha. He's the Republican incumbent, and Democratic challenger Jim Swanson. Until then, I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. We'll chat again next week.